Do you have to be rich to own what CPAs call the rich man's Roth? Nope. Next on Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio with New York Times best-selling author and your host, Doug Andrew.
This is Doug Andrews speaking to you, our incredible national audience, from our three-dimensional wealth studios nestled at the base of the majestic Rocky Mountains. This show is about empowering you, people and organizations that want to optimize their assets, minimize taxes, and empower their authentic wealth. Folks, you may be aware that I have a YouTube channel. Three Dimensional Wealth is the name of the YouTube channel. It's free, by the way, when you subscribe. And I release every single day a new YouTube. They average about 12 minutes in length, where I answer in depth a question that has been asked between 30 to 300 times a month for the last several months. And recently, the question that I've been asked is, do you have to be rich to own what many savvy CPAs and even tax attorneys often call the rich man's Roth? The short answer is, nope, you do not have to be rich. But see, rich people, according to certain guidelines of income, cannot qualify for a Roth IRA or 401k. So I'm going to share with you my favorite vehicle that has the two benefits of a Roth, and I'll outline those, plus four additional benefits that Roths do not have. And so why would I own a Roth when I can have the two benefits a Roth offers and four additional benefits? But no, you don't have to be rich. But see, people who have certain amounts of income that are over a certain threshold that a lot of Americans would say, well, they're rich. They cannot participate in a Roth. If you make too much money, you cannot own a Roth IRA or 401k. Now, a Roth has two basic benefits. You take after-tax money and you fund your Roth, and it accumulates tax-free. Later in life, when you go to access that money for retirement, is the usual goal, you can access that money without paying tax because you paid tax on the seed money. This all happened back in 1997 when the government was hard up for tax revenue. They were hard up for money. Now, they did it primarily for them, not for you and me. Having said that, a Roth is a step in the right direction because I've always contended that if you were a farmer and you had the choice of buying your seed, let's say in the springtime, and you didn't have to pay tax on what you paid for the price of the seed, but you plant that seed, you cultivate it, you irrigate it, you work hard throughout the summer months, and then in the fall, and I'm talking about the fall of life, when you harvest that crop, now you agree to pay tax on what you sell your harvest for. That's a traditional IRA or 401k. You get a tax break on the seed money, the contributions you make. It accumulates tax deferred, but then when you go to retire, now you harvest your money and you agree to pay tax on what you sell your harvest for. And traditional IRAs and 401ks were established for years under the premise that most retirees will likely be in a lower tax bracket when they retire because they'll have less income, especially if you have a defined benefit pension from teaching school for 30 years or what have you. But see, folks, people have not been in lower tax brackets for more than 25 years when they retire. But still, 91% of Americans, I feel, are duped into putting pre-tax dollars into IRAs or 401ks, being told, oh, you'll likely be in a lower bracket. Folks, that has not been true. For more than 25 years, it took the financial services industry until just about 4 or 5 years ago to finally admit that was the wrong advice. But they don't want to say that too loud because they put themselves out as fiduciaries. And what is a fiduciary supposed to do? Look out for your best interest And if they knew that you were headed for as high or higher tax bracket when you retired, you were not looking out for their best interest. If they put your money in a traditional IRA or 401k, but they get away with it because everybody just follows the herd. But back in 1997, Senator Harry Roth came up with the idea, hey, people are getting smart. And so they realized that many savvy people would pay tax on the seed money and accumulate their money tax deferred. And if they could access it tax free, that would create a windfall of tax revenue for the government. And it did, because when people converted to a Roth from an IRA and then later on a 401k, you convert or you transfer the money over, you roll it over, and that triggers tax, and the government gets their tax revenue. But you see, Roth IRAs and then later 401ks, I feel have too many strings attached. What are they? It's a qualified plan still. See, you can only put in a certain dollar amount or a certain percent of your income. And if you make too much money, you cannot participate in a Roth. And so you take after-tax money and you have limits on what you can contribute, and you cannot access any of that money for at least 5 years or till you're 59 and a half and so forth, because those are some of the other strings attached. Now, also, when governments get hard up for money, sometimes they look at their accounts, like Australia did a few years ago. When that country was hard up for money, they ended up taxing their equivalent of a Roth, and they said, we need the money worse than you do. And so anybody that has more than, let's say, $100,000, you've got enough. Okay, you have more than what you need, and so we're going to charge a tax on that right now. And you wouldn't believe that the Obama administration looked very, very close at doing that back in 2008, 2009, during the huge crash, the second one during that great recession. And so I've never been a fan of qualified plans, qualified with the IRS with certain rules. And that has usually included IRAs and 401ks. I've never owned one, never will. I've never owned a Roth, never will, because I can have the two benefits of a Roth. Your money accumulates tax-free, and you can access the money tax-free, hopefully, okay? I can have those two benefits and four additional benefits with my favorite financial vehicle, which many savvy CPAs call the rich man's Roth. I call it the Laser Fund in my most recent best-selling book. Laser is an acronym that stands for Liquid Assets Safely Earning Returns. But a Laser Fund under the Internal Revenue Code allows you to accumulate your money tax-free, like Roth, and you can access the money tax-free. You fund it with after-tax dollars, just like a Roth, but it has four additional benefits. Here they are. You can put in large sums of money, and that's why it's called the rich man's Roth, because rich people can't put in large sums of money into a Roth. Their income does not qualify them to participate. And the only way that you can put in a large lump sum is if you were to roll over from a traditional IRA or 401k into a Roth. When you structure a Laser Fund, which is a max-funded tax-advantaged insurance contract, where I have averaged 8.2% rate of return for more than 45 years, the last 25 years I've averaged over 10% rate of return, and I'm talking about IRR, internal rate of return, after all costs and fees, okay? And so with the rich man's Roth, the Laser Fund, if I have a banner year and I structured my account to accommodate it, I can put in, let's say, $300,000. You can't do that with a Roth. Now, if I could put in $300,000 and I don't, I only put in $30,000, in the future years, I can make up for the $270,000 I didn't put in. I can make up for the years that I didn't put in the maximum amount allowed. You can't do that with a Roth. Once you don't use the room in a given year, you lose it forever. Now, if I need money, see, in a Roth, you have restrictions on how you can access your money under IRS rules. If I put in $300,000 into a laser fund and a few days later, a month later, I need to access $250,000 of that, I can do that with an electronic funds transfer or a phone call. It does not incur any IRS penalties to access my money. So I can put in large lump sums. I can access it without any IRS rules or penalties. I can make up for years that I did not fund it to its max. But another advantage, I can use indexing, which allows me to participate when the market is up, but not lose when the market goes down. I do not lose money due to market volatility. And the last big benefit is if I die at my current age of 68, if I died, every $1 million I have in my laser fund or laser funds, if I'm diversified, which I am, would blossom to about $2.5 million and transfer to my spouse, my children, my heirs, whoever I leave it to, totally tax-free. There's not a Roth around that will do that. So why would I own a Roth if I can have the benefits of a Roth and four additional benefits?
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
How does a max-funded indexed universal life compare to whole life insurance? Welcome back. This is Doug Andrew. This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio, and I'm passionate about providing you with insights into opportunities that maybe you didn't know existed before. If you're just joining me, in the first segment, I addressed the question, do you have to be rich to own what CPAs and tax attorneys call the rich man's Roth? And the answer was, nope, you do not have to be rich. And the laser fund, my favorite vehicle, is what many CPAs that are savvy with tax law refer to as the rich man's Roth. And so I explained the two benefits that Roths have, which the laser fund also has, plus four additional benefits that Roths do not have. Now, what is a laser fund or the rich man's Roth? It is a max-funded tax-advantaged insurance contract, and I prefer by far indexed universal life, but only with a handful of companies out there offering them. And these vehicles are where I have averaged 8.2% for the last 45 plus years, but the last 25 years I've averaged 10.07% tax-free. Now, this is a vehicle that is in the Internal Revenue Code, deemed a sacred cow. It's tax-free, and many times people, even insurance agents, do not understand indexed universal life, and there's a whole history behind it. Universal Life was the brainchild, not of an insurance company, but actually E.F. Hutton, back in 1980, and they realized that back then you only had term insurance and whole life insurance. And they came up with this idea, hey, why don't we buy term and invest the difference under a tax-free umbrella? And it wasn't whole life, it wasn't term insurance, and so they called it universal life because it was universally applicable on both ends of the spectrum. Their purpose was to take the least amount of insurance that you could get away with under Internal Revenue Code guidelines and put in the most money the IRS would allow as fast as the IRS allows. And that's what turns this into a tax-free cash cow for living benefits for tax-free retirement income that, when structured correctly and funded properly, will knock the socks off of any IRA 401k that is out there on the market. And I can prove that to you all day long. But see, that's what they designed it to be used for, is living benefits. Now, it was universally applicable also to be able to fund life insurance or a death benefit with a lower premium back in 1980 than most whole life insurance policies required. And so you can go from one end of the spectrum, putting in the most money the IRS allows and the least amount of insurance, or you can get the amount of insurance you're wanting for a lower premium than traditional whole life insurance policies were charging. And so in between that is all kinds of flexibility. So one of the reasons why I like indexed universal life insurance is it has far more flexibility than whole life insurance does. Now, whole life insurance was forced to become more competitive after 1980, and they came out with all kinds of different ways to credit higher returns on whole life insurance. And whole life has certain guarantees in there. It's still a viable product if what you want is death benefit. Where I see whole life insurance lacking, and I mean big time, is providing predictable cash flow, tax-free income that will last as long as you do if you live to be 120. See, you may have some tax-free accumulation, but some of the best whole life insurance policies out there from many of the top agents in the country who I have trained, they will maybe tout 8% rates of return, but the internal rate of return, that is net after all costs, would at best be maybe 5.9%. So if you were earning 8 during the entire life of the whole life insurance contract, it would take until age 95 before the internal rate of return would even approach 6%. So that means 2 of the 8 percentage points that you were earning went out in costs. There are a lot of whole life insurance agents that do not understand what I just said. They do not know how to calculate internal rates of return. And so when I talk about internal rates of return, that's the money you're putting into the insurance policy, what it grows to, and you calculate what would be the rate of return required to be able to end up with that much money out at age 65 or age 90 or 95. And some of the best companies out there with some of the highest dividend histories, if they projected 8%, they wouldn't even hit a net internal rate of return of 6%. Why is this a big deal? Because with universal life, if I were to earn, and I've earned higher rates of return, like 8, 9, and 10%, if I earn 10, the costs of the insurance and all the fees within that at the end of the day usually are within 1% of the gross rate of return. If I earn 10, I net 9. If I earn 11, which I have many, many periods of time, I net 10. If I earn in a given year 25%, I net 24. See, whole life insurance cannot show that historical net internal rate of return on their policy. So I have more flexibility. I can put in more money faster under IRS rules. I can maximum fund a universal life insurance contract in 5 years. It takes 7 years to do it with whole life insurance. But the internal rate of return doesn't come close, and then you cannot create predictable income streams. For example, if I have $1 million of tax-free cash value inside of a universal life insurance contract, I can generate 80, 90, or even 100,000 a year of tax-free income into perpetuity without depleting principal. You cannot find a whole life insurance policy that will generate an 8, 9, or a 10% payout without depleting principal. They just can't do it. And sometimes a lot of whole life insurance agents are never trained on how that works. Probably the biggest difference is there are a lot of whole life insurance proponents out there that use the concept of bank on yourself or be your own banker or infinite banking. And they say, well, that's what whole life really is designed for. It shines. And I go, oh, my heavens. Have you ever looked at those concepts using indexed universal life? That's be your own banker on steroids. And they don't understand it. And when they come through and they dive deep into the training, they go, oh, my heavens. This knocks the socks off of using a whole life insurance policy for the banking concept. So, for example, Let's say you have $1 million of cash value inside your universal life insurance contract, and it's earning a net internal rate of return of 10%. That means you could take out $100,000 a year. Now, the smart way would be to borrow $100,000 and let your million continue to earn compound interest. And so the insurance company charges a nominal rate, let's say 4.6 or 5% on that $100,000. But you continue to earn the full indexing rate of 10%, 16%, 25% on the full million. Do you know in 2017 we had many clients who borrowed $1 million at 5%, that's $50,000 a year, and they continue to earn 25% or $250,000 on their money while they were using it. You can't do that with whole life insurance. Folks, this is the bank on yourself concept on steroids.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.